Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
Every summer, we seem to experience some climate hysteria in the news.
It's not just the summer. It's all year long.
Right, but particularly regarding the warming of the planet. So this year was prompted by...
Proper term now is climate change.
Right.
Which is all-encompassing because, you know, if the temperature goes up, it's climate change. If it goes down, it's climate change.
Well, that's what the climate does. It changes.
Does it?
Well...
Gosh, this is a revelation. That's why people should listen to the show, Chris, because they get such wisdom from our banter.
Right.
Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Okay, so this year there was a record heat wave in Europe, and there was a separate story from the Associated Press regarding a new stickiness index that they've come up with, which is basically a humidity index,
sure,
and talking about how the eastern U.S. in July suffered through an all-time high in the stickiness index and when they went back to backdate the data. As though the index existed 30 years ago. So they, of course, attribute the new all-time high stickiness index to the burning of coal, oil, and natural gas. Separately, there was a story about the Hunga Tonga Pacific Ocean underwater volcanic eruption in the year 2022.
Could you say that again, Chris?
Hunga Tonga.
That sounds so cool. Hunga Tonga, that's great. I bet not too many people out there have heard about Hunga Tonga.
Well, they're about to hear what was in the news about the underwater volcanic eruption that NASA experts describe as one of the most dramatic climate events in human history.
When did this take place?
In 2022.
2022. So just three, and it was in what month of the year?
I am not sure. Was it in January, December? Right? It was sometime near the end or the beginning of the year.
Okay. So this is like 2.5 years ago.
Right.
Got it.
So the eruption broke all records for injection of water vapor into the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
The blast sent a plume of water into the Earth's stratosphere that experts are estimating it as approximately 40 trillion gallons of superheated water.
We can't even fathom that kind.
I have no idea how many swimming pools that is.
I think that's more than swimming pools. That's like Great Lakes.
Yes.
Quantity of water.
All right. So volcanoes usually actually a volcanic eruption typically will cool the planet as it spews debris into the atmosphere that effectively blocks the sun.
Right.
It also the particulate causes more rainfall. And I know this because back when in my commodity trading days, we would follow these sort of things because if you had a volcanic eruption, the particulate seeding the clouds would cause more rainfall in the Pacific Northwest, which would mean less use of natural gas in the springtime as the hydro season began.
Interesting.
So Americans continue to register this record low trust in mass media, according to Gallup.
Mm-hmm.
The number of Americans expressing trust has dropped from the low 70s percentage points in the 1970s to the low 30s percentage points today.
Mm-hmm.
I think that stories like this about climate change are responsible in part for nearly every article that I read that has anything to do with a natural disaster. There's always a phrase that attributes at least part of the cause to climate change without ever considering the other possible proximate causes. So this volcano is this eruption, they say, had an impact of increasing the Earth's temperature by 1.5 Celsius.
So, and explain, why is it increasing the temperature?
Because of this injection of water.
So we're retaining more of the heat from the sun.
Correct.
It's just staying within the atmosphere.
Correct.
And that's bringing up the temperature.
Right.
Got it.
So, you know, there's a couple of different angles here, but I just want to get your thoughts generally about, you know, combining the fact that that the news media distrust and this eruption that probably most people, I would say 99% of people, have never even heard about.
Correct. Yeah, I think that one of the reasons for this distrust in the media is because they take overly simplistic concepts and then bang the drum on it over and over again. And then people will say, well, you're a science denier if you don't believe in climate change. No, actually, there's a lot of scientists who are looking at a lot of things like this, of natural causes that may temporarily increase the temperature of the planet. there's scientists are talking about another effect out there, the greening of the planet, which because of the increase of carbon dioxide has actually fostered the growth of more more plant life. And there's trees and vegetation taking over parts of the earth which were not previously covered by it or had been deforested because of our reliance on fossil fuels before. So there's like an offsetting effect. It's a, if you look that up, it's a really fascinating concept. I attended a conference in England last year, the ARC conference, and there was a couple of different speakers who were talking about this greening effect and how it's actually counter to what the climate change mantras are all about. So I think this is the reason why sometimes people are not trusting the media, because they're not looking at the science as a whole, but they've hyper-focused on one thing and then only listened to people who reinforce that one particular take on things.
Right. Well, I think that's also one of the recent moves by the current administration to recognize, as you just pointed out, that the CO2, the increased CO2 in the atmosphere creates a longer growing season.
Like right.
There's way more people that die of cold than of heat each year.
Right.
So the heating up, natural or otherwise, of the planet results in a longer growing season, more food, less death from
more habitable areas of the planet.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So, and these are cycles. We can look at the historical geological record and the ice record, and we can see that there are periods of fluctuation in temperature of the planet. And the whole climate change approach is saying that all of this change and fluctuation is caused by human beings. I think it's just a bit of hubris. I think we're attributing too much to ourselves. Have humans had a certain effect? Yes, in certain places more than others. And this is why I think what the Holy Father Pope Francis talked about in his encyclical letter of Laudato Si is, you know, our role in care for the environment. But let's not overblow that, what our role is either. You know, the Hanga Tonga.
Hanga Tonga.
Thanks for saying that. The Hanga Tonga volcano is just one example of how or another volcano that's above the earth and it has the opposite effect of one that's below the sea. These are offsetting natural phenomenon that are way more powerful than the human effect on the climate.
I think a lot of the climate talk really comes down to folks, in a way, worshiping Mother Nature.
That could be part of it. I think another part of it, too, is just fear-mongering. People are easily controlled when they're fearful of something. So if you can instill fear in a certain direction, then you can control and manipulate a population. You talk with young people who have been indoctrinated with climate change in public schools, and they're very fearful about the future. They're fearful of, and we have to change all these things, which may not make sense. And so I think here, Chris, bottom line is, let's look at the real data. Let's look at what science has been wrong in the past. Sometimes we attribute this kind of almost like godlike quality to scientists. Like they never get anything wrong. That's just ignorance. There are so many instances where science has been completely wrong.
Science is always moving forward and it's disproving what was previously believed.
That's exactly right. And so we shouldn't be afraid of science, but we have to keep an open mind to look at what is the data pointing to and what are researchers saying and being open to changing our minds too when the data shows otherwise.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. In our last segment, we talked about Hanga Tonga.
Hanga Tonga. That's going to be, maybe we should change our show to the Hanga Tonga show.
I like saying it.
Maybe it's a little catchier than Crossed Wire. I don't know.
Well, we were talking about that in relation to trust in the news media and taking this topic a little further down the road. Let's talk about not just the news media, but also Hollywood. So a recent Wall Street Journal op-ed entitled The People's Republic of Hollywood was detailing how there's virtually never in modern times a movie where a corporation or capitalism isn't the bad guy and how it helps explain the rise of political figures like the presumptive next mayor of New York, Zohran Mamdani.
Mm-hmm.
The article goes on through a litany of Hollywood titles all the way back to the 1973 movie The Way We Were with Barbara Streisand and Robert Redford, had that rail on capitalism. And I personally can't think of a single movie where capitalism isn't portrayed as evil. And sometimes, even though Hollywood is seemingly trying to manipulate you in this way, they inadvertently do the opposite. So I remember watching the movie. Did you see the movie The Founder about the...
You know, that's one I missed. I didn't see that
right,
movie.
Michael Keaton portrays Ray Kroc in the story of McDonald's.
McDonald's. Yeah. Actually did see that. That's a really good movie.
Right. It's about his successful franchising of the McDonald's brand.
And his unsuccessful marriages.
Correct. So the movie was clearly meant to be a hit piece, though, on Ray Kroc, portraying him as having swindled, you know, the McDonald brothers
greedy
out of their concept.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Notwithstanding Ray Kroc's personal life, which you reference in his adultery and divorce of his first wife, the movie, when I watched it, I was taken by Ray Kroc's, you know, maniacal commitment to consistency of the product and the quality of the product.
And his drive to make it happen.
And the risk that he took.
Yeah.
To make it happen. And now you have this, you know, multi-billion dollar worldwide franchise. It's an American icon.
Right. And it's been the model for so many other type of franchise businesses, which have been successful since the inception of McDonald's.
Yeah. And so, you know, likewise, I can't think of a single Hollywood mainstream movie in recent decades that's portrayed the Catholic Church or priests in a positive manner, other than the movie adaptation of Les Mis, where... The priest was...
There's been a few others, some B movies. What's the one?
Yeah, I'm
like
talking
Father
about
Stew.
That to me wouldn't be considered part of the, the mainstream.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So, of course, there's movies. There's independent movies that get made all the time. But the broader point I'm going for here is, has this... These movies, has it given rise to this sympathetic view of socialism and communism that you're seeing now with the presumptive mayor of New York and the fellow in Minneapolis?
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a very valid question, Chris. And I think the reality is that people in the media world in general have a different set of values than the general population in the United States. And this has been shown in survey after survey, study after study, of the different political affiliations, the value system. People in that space tend to, not all of them, of course, but they tend to be more liberal-leaning or more socialist-leaning, even communist-leaning, like card-carrying members of the Communist Party who get involved in that particular industry. So it's no wonder that their particular biases, their worldview is going to come across in the stuff that they produce, you know. So I don't think we should be surprised at that. I don't think there's anything particularly revealing about that. And I think that's a good reason why we should be very, exercise critical thinking anytime that we're watching a movie or a TV show. I mean, the statistics are really clear, too, when you see how people who are regular TV watchers, their value system begins to align more and more with the shows that they're watching. And in contrast, I mean, how much TV do you watch in a given week, Chris?
0.0.
Exactly. That's about how much I watch, too. Sometimes I'll watch a movie once a week.
Yeah, I'll watch a movie.
Yeah, but...
If it was made before the year 2000, I'll watch it.
I like some of the more modern movies. I have a very critical eye with movies. Actually, it drives nuts some of the priests in my community. We were watching How to Train Your Dragon the other night, the new live action one. And at the end of the movie, it was a fun movie and we enjoyed it. And at the end, you know, one of the priests was saying, "Oh, it's such a great movie about fatherhood and connecting your father." And I just made a snide comment like, "Yeah, it's also, you know, promoting transgenderism. So if you don't align with your father's values, he just needs to accept you." And they all kind of like rolled their eyes.
Right.
We walked out of the room. But, the values of the people who are in the media, they're going to come across and it will change the values of the people who are watching it.
Well, here's what I find comical is after years of Hollywood denouncing the nuclear power industry with movies like The China Syndrome and Silkwood, now nuclear energy is having this pop culture moment where there are people organizing rallies to save the Diablo Canyon nuke plant in California, instead of not to shut it down, but to save the plant. And it's young,
interesting,
and it's young folks with the, instead of no nukes, it's save the nukes. Because people are,
I hadn't seen that trend.
Yeah, because they are realizing this is emission-free power.
Right.
And the need for the power generation, particularly in our, you know, future economic world with these AI data centers, mm-hmm. is only growing. And one of the,
and the safety measures are much better than they were in the past, too.
Yeah.
So a lot of the clear fears and obvious, that are around nuclear or have been dissipated.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's the other thing is, you know, our Navy operates ships, nuclear-powered ships, without incident for, you know, decades.
Right.
This is something that can be done safely.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it, like I said, comical that the whole Hollywood no nukes has now become Hollywood save nukes.
Well, it goes back to your initial point. The People's Republic of Hollywood. Sometimes their value system is just like a little strange. So I think we have to exercise critical thinking and make sure we're cautious and intelligent about what sources we're choosing to listen to.
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires.
China is working on a robot design that has an artificial womb.
A what?
An artificial womb.
Artificial womb. Okay. I thought that's what I heard, but
womb will receive nutrients through a hose in its abdomen and soon be able to carry a fetus for about a 10 months gestation period before giving birth.
Why
the cost for this, what's that?
Why 10 months instead
I'm
of
not
9
sure.
months?
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess it's up to 10 months is what this robot's being designed.
Mm-hmm.
So the cost for this quote surrogacy is about $14,000. Which is significantly less than the human surrogacy that goes on. In the U.S., a human surrogate can cost
in other places,
but in the U.S., it's roughly between $100,000 and $200,000.
Oh, wow.
So there's many, many unanswered questions about how this robot's going to give birth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But when I read about this, it just made me think about the movie The Matrix and those, the fields of pod babies.
Right.
Right. So
and
what are your
several other sci-fi movies in the past that have had come up with similar types of things?
Yeah. So pregnancy robots. What do you think?
I think it's a terrible idea. It's clearly not respecting the dignity of the human person who was born and treating them like another product. You know, let's make crackers and put them in a box. Let's make a baby and, you know, take him out of the pregnancy machine, the pregnancy robot. It's just like, gosh, it's revolting.
Another angle here, too, is I think recently in med school, they are teaching that, or there's some thought that vaginal birth versus C-section, the vaginal birth, somehow the microbiome that you get exposed to in the birth canal is related to a lower incidence of autism.
Mm.
It's one of the theories out there on autism. So, you know, this whole removing...
And I've heard also that it contributes in some way to the immune system. It'd be interesting to see what... I haven't dug into that topic, but there are some interesting studies about that out there.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're taking, you know, the woman entirely out of the equation here.
Right.
And all the, you know, potential good effects on both probably the baby and the mother.
And the mother, because we know that through the birthing process, through the umbilical cord, the woman receives stem cells from their own child, which she stores in her body and can actually use to heal her own body later on in life, which is a really fascinating area of exploration of that symbiotic relationship between mother and child in the pregnancy process and birthing process.
Well, can you just remind folks what the Catholic Church's stance is generally on surrogacy?
Well, surrogacy doesn't respect the nature of the relationship between mother and child, of course, because during the 9 months of pregnancy, mother and child bond very deeply. And so to strip that away, put the child in another woman who's not the genetic mother, it's denying the dignity of the woman who's the surrogate. It's also undermining the dignity of the mother and the connection with their own child.
Yeah, I mean, the voice. You become familiar with the voice even in the womb of the mom that's carrying you, right?
That's right. Yeah, there are emotional ties that begin from the womb. Yeah. And we, you know, we tinker with these things to our own peril, Chris. And I think that, you know, future generations will look back and say, oh, gosh, what were they thinking?
Crossed Wires.
If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Norway's Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is the world's largest, is selling.
What's a sovereign wealth fund?
It's a state.
Pardon my ignorance.
Right. So it's something similar to what the U.S. is establishing with taking an interest, the government's 10% interest in the company Intel. Okay. So it's a state sponsored hedge fund.
And what are they investing in with this hedge fund?
Well, so Norway, one of the things that they're invested in is the company Caterpillar.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They're selling.
Everyone knows Caterpillar.
What's, yeah.
Big yellow.
Right. Tractors.
Earth moving equipment.
Mm-hmm. So the reason they're selling has nothing to do with Caterpillar's profit or cash flow. The fund is saying that there's a risk that the U.S. machinery company is contributing to the suffering in Palestinian territories because Israel is using the bulldozers to demolish property in Gaza. I had to shake my head at this one. Okay.
Wow.
So it's not like the bulldozers were designed for this specific Gaza demolition in mind. It's a fungible product, right? That's interchangeable with any other brand.
And to be clear, this hedge fund of the government of Norway, it has invested in an American company, Caterpillar, and they're going to divest of their stock in Caterpillar because of their concerns about the usage of their trucks and equipment in Gaza.
Right.
Okay.
So basically, if you follow along, then their logic, I guess they would want Caterpillar to interview their customers before they buy a bulldozer to ask what their intended use of the product is.
Yeah.
So I think of, okay, what if you see a picture of somebody on a Caterpillar bulldozer demolishing a home in Gaza, but they're drinking a Coca-Cola? Do you have to sell your shares in Coca-Cola too? Because you're refreshing yourself with Coca-Cola?
Following the logic, you would have to. You know, Chris, this is why the Catholic Church has got a lot of wisdom and moral thinking. And there's a whole teaching on cooperation and evil that would help you to see with greater clarity in this situation. They're a little off the mark here in Norway. And I think that if they knew a little bit more Catholic teaching, would help them.
Well, that's why I brought this topic up, because you and I have had a discussion in the past about when you are proximate to the cause.
Right, right.
And so maybe you could amplify that once again.
Yeah. So there's basically two lines. So the whole question is cooperation and evil. When can you cooperate in evil? So formal or material? Formal cooperation means I want to do the evil thing. I agree with the evil thing that's being done. You can never do that. Okay, that's always going to be morally wrong. So if someone wants to torture a prisoner, you can never formally go along with that. I agree, I can continue with that. The second type is material cooperation. Material is like, I don't necessarily agree with it, but I'm materially cooperating. Now, the material cooperation can either be proximate or remote. So proximate means you're really close to it. Remote means it's further away. It's more distant. So there are cases where material cooperation, which is distant, can be morally licit. It can be okay. And this has been the constant teaching of the church. This is something I studied back when I was studying moral theology in Rome, over 15 years ago. And at that time, it was already longstanding teaching of the church. And this is applied in cases like of the use of vaccines. Okay, we know that to use aborted babies to develop vaccines is a bad thing. But that cooperation evil has become so remote, so distant, that the vaccine lines which are available now are so far removed from that it is morally okay to utilize those. If there's others available that aren't derived from aborted babies, better to use those. And you should articulate your wish as an end user that you would prefer that they not develop them from these. But you can morally use that because it is material and it's remote.
All right, let's use an example. So contrast the difference between somebody who's working for, say, a pornographic content creator who's doing payment processing versus, say, the person who is writing the script for a pornographic movie.
Right. Well, using your case, I think both of those would be problematic because they're proximate cooperation in the evil of the pornography industry. Someone who is helping to process payments, that is integral to the actual work of the company succeeding in its work. So I think that would be problematic. Let me use a little bit different case. It'll make it clear. Let's say a case of an abortion clinic. Okay. They're carrying out abortions. They're killing babies. All right. So someone who believes that, you know, this is fundamentally important for the rights of women and giving them freedom in their lives, they're in formal cooperation. That's wrong, even though they may not see it at the time. Someone who is maybe a janitor who's cleaning the facilities at the abortion clinic, doesn't agree with abortion but needs a job, and they're going to be cleaning the facilities, that's material cooperation, and it's proximate. It's too close. You don't want to take that job. But a different case would be the power company, which supplies power to that whole neighborhood where there happens to be an abortion clinic. That's material cooperation, but it's remote.
And that's what I meant by payment processor. I was thinking along the lines of, you can't say you're going to divest your shares of Visa or MasterCard because they're the payment processor.
Correct. Yeah. That then becomes remote, and it's no longer a cooperation in evil where the evil stench rubs off on.
Which is, I think, akin to Caterpillar here. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Clearly. Yeah. This is a clear case of very remote participation in what, I mean, again, you could even argue, is this inherently evil even in this case?
Right.
People may take a political stance where they don't think it's the right thing to do, but let's look, I mean, you have to look at the specifics of what's going on in the demolition. If these are destroyed buildings already, if they're dilapidated buildings that happen to be in Gaza, there's no moral problem with that. If they've been torn up by war and they just need to be knocked down to be rebuilt, no moral problem. If there are people living in those buildings and it's in a legitimate place and they're trying to take over the land to put in a Israeli settlers, well, that's a different question.
But regardless, the brand of bulldozer that you use.
Correct.
I mean, what about the pen that you use to sign the order?
Right.
I mean,
it gets into the realm of ridiculous. And that's where the teaching of the church gives you a lot of clarity and help on these type of issues.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crosswires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.